Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It is true that we cannot depend on government alone to create jobs or long-term growth. But at this particular moment, only government can provide the short-term boost necessary to lift us from a recession this deep and severe.
President-elect Obama speaking the other day, and every January, the business consultancy known as the Eurasia Group issues a report forecasting the top global political risks to their business clients for the coming year. This year's list came out last week, and while it includes many of the geopolitical risks you might imagine from elsewhere in the world, the situations in Iran and China and Pakistan, for example, its number one political risk for the marketplace in 2009 is the rise of the United States Congress as it intervenes more aggressively in the economy. Fascinating, isn't it, that just as the new president, as we heard there, and new Congress are preparing massive legislation designed to stimulate the economy, a leading business consultant group sees Congress as the top business risk. Do the political and business sectors still see the world so differently? Let's ask Ian Bremmer, president of the Eurasia Group and author of the report. He also has a book coming out on politics and strategic investment called The Fat Tail, The Power of Political Knowledge for Strategic Investment, to be published by the Oxford University Press. And Art Kleiner, editor-in-chief of Strategy and Business magazine. They will both be taking part in a public event in Manhattan tomorrow called Top Risks and Ethical Decisions 2009 at the Carnegie Council for Ethics and International Affairs. So Art Kleiner, Ian Bremmer, thanks so much for coming down to our studios today. Good morning.
Good morning, Brian.
Good morning.
I see the big smile on your face, Art, so I'll throw the question to you first. What Congress says it's doing, and the president-elect says he's doing, is all this stuff meant to stimulate the economy, not to be a risk to it. How do you understand Ian's summation of Congress as the number one political risk to the marketplace?
I just came from a meeting earlier where I heard the shortage, the great gap as a confidence gap. If there was confidence in institutions, then we wouldn't be in the middle of this meltdown, or we'd be recovering from it. So the way to turn around that question is, how much confidence do we have in Congress going forward and in the government to implement what Congress does? Probably a lot more than we would have had, say, a year and a half ago. But what unintended consequences are going to come up? What kinds of things don't we know that they're going to have and that they're going to be able to do? And you could argue the same question on Wall Street or Main Street, for that matter, as well.
Ian, you want to take it since this is your list? How did that wind up at the top?
Well, there were a lot of risks that came out of the United States last year, but a lot of them weren't political risks. They were coming from Wall Street. They were coming from hedge funds. They were coming from investment bankers. New York City used to be the financial capital of the world. It's no longer even the economic capital of the United States. Washington is. And frankly, that's happening all over the world, right? Beijing becoming more important than Shanghai. Abu Dhabi become more important than Dubai.
The political capital is becoming more important than the commercial capitals to the marketplace.
That's right. Because of state capitalism becoming important and because of the importance of regulatory and stimulus packages all over the world with this downturn, no question. But this coming year, there's a lot of market support for this extraordinarily cohesive economic team that Barack Obama has put together. And clearly, they're going to be coming out of the box swinging, 80-plus percent approval ratings for these guys. Having said that—
Of course, they haven't done anything yet.
Having said that, Congress hasn't done anything quite yet either, at least this incoming Congress. It's going to be a very cohesive Congress, too. It's going to be a much more progressive ideologically Congress, going to be much more focused on politics of constituency and need for supporting their own domestic sort of popular bases on regulatory policy, on stimulus packages. It's going to be less efficient. It's going to take longer to get through. And they have the potential to scapegoat, investigate, and overreact. And so if you look in the grand scheme of political risks for the marketplace in 2009, there are a lot of big geopolitical risks out there. But number one, I hate to say it, is Congress.
Why wouldn't the cohesiveness of Congress, as you describe it, be an opportunity, be a bulwark against the bigger risk of the government perhaps not doing enough at this time of financial crisis. In fact, here's another clip of President-elect Obama talking to George Stephanopoulos yesterday on that point.
Here's what we know, though, that the sooner a recovery and reinvestment package is in place, the sooner we can start turning the economy around. We can't afford 3, 4, 5, 6 more months where we're losing 500,000 jobs per month. And the estimates are that if we don't do anything, we could see 4 million jobs lost this year.
Do you think your clients in the business community fundamentally disagree with that? Is there a disconnect between the business sector and the political sector on the risks of doing nothing versus the risks of doing the so much that they're about to do?
I think so much is not the problem. I think the problem is too little, too late. The problem is too little, not very coordinated. The problem is a lot of infighting, and as a consequence, less efficiency, less cohesiveness between an Obama administration and a Congress with a great many moving parts. In fact, you know, if anything, I think they want more strength coming out of Washington, but they want it in a unified way. You know, usually if you look at the way markets think of governments, they, in developed states, they want gridlock. They want a Democratic president, they want a Republican Congress, or vice versa.
So Congress doesn't interfere with their business.
That's right. In emerging markets, that's where you want cohesive government. You know, you look over the last 20 years in Turkey, whenever you've seen a coalition government, markets go down. When you have a strong, cohesive, unified government, they go up, because even if it's Islamists in charge, they're going to move forward policy. The interesting thing in the last 6 months in the United States is the investment community has increasingly perceived the United States short term as an emerging market. In other words, that they so desperately wanted any form of cohesion and movement from Washington to get the markets going.
Pretty scary.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure I'd see it the same way. I think industrial society is reinventing itself, which it does every 60 years or so. I mean, it did it when the electricity grid came into being for the first time, and it did it before that with the railroads and steamships. And at the beginning, there's always a huge amount of speculation. And yeah, the speculators want the government to get out of the way. But sooner or later, like after World War II with Bretton Woods, the business community wants government to kind of step in. They want government to be transparent, and that's going to be a big issue. And government is going to want business to be transparent. Whether all these institutions can step up to the requirements of actually working together instead of butting heads, I don't know. But
and they don't always want each other to be transparent. Look at the TARP, right? It's so untransparent what the banks are spending the money on, and the government is protecting the right of the banks to hold that information secret so they don't lose out in the marketplace by revealing that they're taking government funding.
Yeah, and yet, you know, that transparency sooner or later will probably come back to haunt this initial effort. And
what about, from your point of view, Art, and my guest Art Kleiner, the editor-in-chief of Strategy and Business Magazine, and Ian Bremmer, president of the Eurasia Group, which just put out a list, its annual list, of the top political risks to business for 2009. Art, there are people who say the risk, that the government is not planning enough of a stimulus. A lot of Democrats in the Senate are saying that now. Paul Krugman is writing that in his column twice a week, that the Obama Congress stimulus plan is not enough, not big enough, to save the economy from heading toward a depression.
My bias is always on how it's executed. In other words, you know, I wrote a book called The Age of Heretics, which was about the history of management. And strategy in business is all about execution matters. I mean, the Iraq War, the original crisis on Wall Street, all had this huge message, how you do it matters. In that sense, I'm not sure whether it matters that much how big the stimulus is. I think what matters is how it's put into place, how much people learn from the initial stages as they put into place more, and ultimately how big it's allowed to get.
I'm sorry that I didn't mention your book in introducing you, and I mentioned him. Is that a recent book?
Yeah, it's just this year, but that's fine.
Go ahead. What is that book?
Oh, it's a history of the social movement to change corporations for the better. It's from the inside.
Now, we're going to talk about the ethics piece of this in a minute, because that's the nature of the conference that you're at tomorrow, is relating your political risks list to global ethics. But on one more piece of this, Ian, the report sees a risk in greater regulation of the financial markets. And that also made me wonder, because wasn't it insufficient regulation of the financial markets, of risk in particular in the financial markets, that led to the current crisis?
That's precisely the point. There was last year an enormous amount of risk and inadequate regulatory policy, but those risks largely came from the economic side. Those are the sort of things the economists would be focusing on. The nature of the risk have moved a little south from New York to Washington, and the political scientists now have to focus on the overreaction. When you see BCCI, you see Enron scandals. Congressional reaction has been things like Sarbanes-Oxley, things that have been often misplaced, dealing with the last crisis, not the next one, and also creating very significant difficulties in competitiveness for the United States. So the danger is overregulation.
The paradox there, though, is that you see a mandate for lower levels of risk as increasing risk.
That's right. Because of the lack of effectiveness and efficiency of the sorts of actors that are going to come to play from Washington.
Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I do, and it makes me wistful.
For?
Well, wouldn't it be nice if legislation worked like the internet works, you know, where you could just kind of iterate things and see what happens and rewrite the bill without a lot of trouble?
Now, your panel tomorrow, as I said, is not just on the risks to business, but on the ethical decisions that the world faces linked to your risks report. Ian, why is it framed that way? Do you see good ethics and good business strategy as being, as being in tension, some kind of tension in new ways?
Well, they certainly can be. We spend so much time talking about, you know, just getting the risks right and hedging in a short-term fashion. That's what hedge funds have been all about. It's the nature of the multinational corporation, shareholders, and maximizing profit for this quarter, not necessarily focusing on what's going to happen 2 and 5 years down the road. But, of course, when you think about the implications of this bailout and increasingly economists talking about the possibility of a Treasury's bubble like the internet bubble, where we're actually engaging in short-term spending that is of massive amounts, but that the United States may not be able to pay off, and it's going to be increasingly difficult to get international investment into the United States, the U.S. dollar going away as a global currency. What does that mean ethically for the way we think about how the world is going to be managed or not? What is the move towards non-polarity as opposed to the unipolarity of the United States, a multipolarity that other states aren't prepared and can't step up towards? What does that mean for some of the major challenges to the world that we're sort of seeing on the horizon?
In fact, when you talk about the potential for a Treasury's bubble, I mean, one way to look skeptically at what the government is doing is that they're responding to a crisis of too much debt, because that's what we're coming out of, a crisis of too much mortgage debt, too much credit card debt, all that stuff. We're responding to a crisis of debt with massive amounts of additional debt, except that it's government debt instead of private sector debt.
I agree with that completely, and I think what is concerning is that the environment that the United States has been in, which is one where since it's the biggest game in town, everybody has a level of support for it. You can attract the Chinese to buy massive amounts of treasuries. You can attract the Gulf states to do the same. Everyone wants to buy into the U.S. dollar. Now, they're still doing that right now, but do we really think it's feasible that that level of international attractiveness of the United States economy and the U.S. dollar will maintain itself for the next 3, 5, 10 years? I'd be very skeptical about that. There hasn't been that much economic decoupling yet, because if the U.S. sneezes, everyone catches a cold. But there's been a massive amount of political decoupling, where the Chinese, the Russians, the Gulf states increasingly don't want to listen to what the United States is saying about the way the global financial architecture should work. And that will eventually lead to different sorts of economic decisions.
So, Art, where does the ethics question enter for you?
A bubble is a loss of perspective. When you're in a bubble, you're making decisions because you just can't see all the ramifications of what you're doing, which is exactly what you've just been talking about, Ian, around Treasury and the U.S. That's an ethical problem. Ethics doesn't mean, you know, being empathetic to other people. It means how far can you see the implications of what you do. And the problem with being in a bubble is you don't know it's a bubble, or if you do know it's a bubble, you don't know when it's going to burst. And we've not yet seen something like the Treasury burst in modern times. So the only answer then is, how do you live right? and that then become, you know, as a government, living right means something different than it means for us as individuals, and exactly what that is, it's hard to know.
Is one way to frame that ethical dilemma the ethics of, or the imperative, the ethical imperative of short-term relief for people suffering in the economic collapse versus the risk of higher taxation or whatever that slows, or inflation slowing down the longer-term recovery if there is a Treasury's bubble and it bursts?
Well, very few people would run the U.S. government the way it runs if it was their business, right? And so one way to think of it ethically is our day by day is the structure of the government being reworked. There are wonderful people there doing great stuff, but is the overall structure being reworked on a systematic basis?
Of course, one answer to that is it's not a business, and the government is not supposed to be a business.
Well,
it's got different goals. It's got different values. And if it was in the business of trying to maximize revenue and minimize expenses, then it would be a business and not a civic function.
Yeah, but that's a bit of a red herring, though. I mean, just to cut waste, just to do things well, just to have a standard of excellence and think and live that day by day. I mean, it does, and then it doesn't. And, you know, and most corporations don't either to the extent they could. When we start talking about ethics, we're starting to talk from kind of the inside out. And if one of the reasons why companies like Toyota and Procter & Gamble are so revered is because they do practice something from the inside out, which means that when you look at them from the outside, they're not like typical companies. And I think the same could be true of governments.
One of the risks that you see, Ian, as a response to the economic crisis is more protectionism, correct?
I think that's possible, yes.
I've heard a theory that says just as the risk of doing nothing in the 1930s was to risk the United States turning to communism or socialism in response to the crisis, the risk now in doing nothing is that intervention is meant to protect global trade. It's meant to protect against things getting so bad that people close up.
Well, I think that for 2009, you're not likely to see a huge amount of direct and global protectionism come out of the United States, but you are going to see very significant stimulus packages for all sorts of different sectors of the U.S. economy that will look, for all intents and purposes, to the Europeans and to countries like China, like the United States is engaging in unfair practices to support its industries vis-a-vis other countries' industries, and they will react to that in turn. That can lead to a protectionist cycle. There's also the issue that in China itself, the relative level of Chinese governmental support for its own industries in the absence of a rule of law is creating significant competitive hurdles for the United States. And at the end of the day, Obama, Clinton talked a little bit of protectionism for populist reasons in the election period. But now that Obama and Clinton are going to be in office, they're not going to be talking that much anymore. And that's because the business community in the United States, which is such an important driver of all of this, still is pro-free trade. Over the course of the next few years, we could easily see a situation where the business community in the United States, because of a difficult environment in China especially, starts pushing a much more harsh trade regime towards China out of Washington. And that would be the beginning of a very difficult risk environment.
Last thing, our next segment is going to be about political risk from global warming, like how it may already be a factor in Darfur. Are you forecasting global warming as a risk to business in the near or the longer term?
Not in the near term. In the near term, I think the overwhelming governmental response in the U.S., Europe, and China is going to be pushing back the global warming challenge because they have to do everything possible to stimulate the economy out of this global recession. So as a consequence, things like cap and trade, things like trying to increase carbon prices and the rest, all of that is going to be pushed back. Certainly, it's going to make more of a risk of climate change in the medium to long term as a consequence.
All right. Well, I know there are a lot of other risks in your report, the top risks for 2009 released by the Eurasia Group that we didn't get to talk about. Little things like the Middle East and Afghanistan and Pakistan, but it's all in there. Can people get this on a website?
They can. They can get it online on www.eurasiagroup.net.
All right. And both of you, Art Kleiner, the editor-in-chief of Strategy and Business Magazine, and Ian Bremmer, president of the Eurasia Group, will be taking part at the Carnegie Council for International Ethics event on these top risks for 2009 and the ethical implications at noon tomorrow at the Carnegie Council, 170 East 64th Street. Fascinating conversation. Thank you both.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and coming up in a minute, we will get to those political risks, not just environmental risks, from global warming.